Today at Reader's Corner, Mark Greaney, author of the new book, Midnight Black. I'm Bob Custro. Welcome to Reader's Corner. On today's program, best-selling author Mark Greaney joins us to talk about his new book, Midnight Black. The latest in his popular Gray Man series, Midnight Black, is set in Eastern Europe, winds up in Russia, where court gentry, the Gray Man, is trying to free an imprisoned master spy from a Russian gulag. To read Midnight Black is to come as close as many of our readers will ever get to understanding Putin's Russia today. Mark Greaney is the author of a half dozen New York Times bestsellers with Tom Clancy. He co-authored Locked On, Threat Vector, Command Authority. His first novel, The Gray Man, was made into a major motion picture, and then he wrote 13 more Gray Man novels, the last of which, Midnight Black, is what we're going to be talking about here today. He joins us today while on book tour. Mark Greaney, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start at the beginning, Mark. Tell us about this guy, Court Gentry, who he is, why he's called the Gray Man, and maybe even something about where you got this idea, like maybe in El Salvador of all places?
Yeah, initially I did. I had written a few manuscripts and had not been published, and I was looking for something new. And I, at the same time, I worked for a medical device company, and I was one of the guys that had to speak Spanish to customers on the phone, and my Spanish was not very good. So I went down to Guatemala for 4 months to study Spanish. And I was just down there on vacation in El Salvador one weekend when I was not taking classes, and just ran into this guy, just saw this guy in a seedy little bar in a very small town in El Salvador. And he was American, but he was very different from the other Americans that I saw there because he wasn't like a surfer or a language student like I was. And he just looked tougher. So I just made up this whole backstory, not thinking I was going to write a book about it, but I was just sitting there drinking a beer, making up a story in my head. And then by maybe the next day, I started thinking I could turn that into like a character in a novel. And so basically the idea of this guy, Court Gentry, is he's former CIA officer, paramilitary officer. And at the beginning of the series, the CIA is trying to hunt him down and kill him, and he doesn't know why. So that's the first few books. Here we are at book 14. All the books are standalone. You don't have to read them in any order, or you don't have to read them all to know what's going on.
Right.
In book 14, you have him not working with the CIA, but he does have a sort of an uneasy detente with certain members of the agency who help him out here and there. And the woman that he loves is a former Russian foreign intelligence officer, SVR, and her name is Zoya Zakharova. And she has been taken by the Russians. She's being hunted by her agency, just like Court was with his. And she's disappeared into Russia, and he's desperate to go in there and try and find her. It's the largest country in the world. Everyone, all of his friends think she's been executed, but he can't let himself believe that. So the book opens up with him desperately trying to get over the border and into Russia to try and find Zoya.
And just for the record, we're all about preserving the plot. We never want to discuss how it all unfolds, but there's still an awful lot to talk about here. You have a reputation as an author who travels a lot. I mean, here you are just talking about El Salvador. And I was amused by the fact that I'm reading this novel by this American guy, and he's talking about the subway system in Moscow. And I thought, you know, that's a pretty good indication that this guy must have been there, maybe not recently, but at one time. And I think I did read that you did travel. I'm not sure about Ukraine, but I know. Tell us a little bit about your travels.
Yeah, fortunately, I went to Russia when it was still safe to do so. If an American that goes to Russia right now would just be arrested and then traded, just to be traded back for, the Russians need a limitless supply of Westerners to trade for their limitless supply of Russian criminals that we're holding over here. But I did go there before the war in Ukraine and spent a good bit of time in Moscow and some time in St. Petersburg. The book also takes place up in the Baltic and down in the Balkans, and I've been to both of those parts of the world. So really all my research for this book, I didn't know it at the time, but I was doing it when I wrote with Tom Clancy, because I was in Russia writing a Tom Clancy novel called Command Authority. And I still have all my, notes and videos and whatnot. So I was able to incorporate scenes in Gorky Park and the Moscow subway station from my own experiences.
I had a laugh when you said that anybody going to Russia today would be imprisoned. You would certainly be one of them, because your publisher sent out some questions that they were asking you. And one was about, what do you hope readers will take away from the book? And this is your quote: "Russia's mafia state and its imperialistic desires make interesting subject matter for an espionage novel. So I hope readers will learn something from the book about what is going on overseas and how it can affect every one of us." That's very well said. But to your point, you wouldn't last long in Russia's streets anyway.
Yeah, I mean, really, none of us would. And when I was there, it was before this war started. I actually picked up a tale. Got followed around just in central Moscow, not because really of anybody was that interested in me, but I'm sure they would have been interested in anybody that I spoke with. So if I was going to be meeting with somebody who worked in the Russian government or something, you know, they knew I was writing Tom Clancy novels at the time. So
yeah,
I'm sure they would have liked to have known if I would, but they saw I was basically just wandering around like an idiot in the subway system trying to see how
right.
things worked and take pictures of things. So I probably wasn't the most interesting thing that intelligence guy who followed me had done.
So this may not be the work of a novelist, but I have to ask you anyway, after reading that quote about Russia's mafia state and its imperialistic desires, we're at an interesting point in time here where there may be some negotiations about Ukraine and with Russia involved and maybe Ukraine not involved. You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I always say what I believe. I'm really disgusted by what's going on right now, and there's no sense of it. And I really hope and actually believe Ukrainians will reject the deal. And I think to a lot of Americans who think we run the world, we're going to think, you know, there's going to be some offense taken to the fact that Ukraine isn't going to give up their sovereignty because they've been told to by some third parties. And, you know, but as it looks now, Russia is going to be offered pretty much everything that they want at this stage of the game.
Yeah.
They weren't able to take Ukraine in 3 days like they thought they'd be able to. And so now they get to leave saving face and taking 20% of the country. And, along with a lot of assurances that Ukraine will never join NATO, that Ukraine won't be able to sort of redevelop. Mm-hmm. And as it is now, we're requesting the Ukrainians pay us back in raw materials, and none of that makes any sense for the Ukrainians, who are actually doing really well in this war and just are fighting for their lives.
That's well put. I interviewed a Ukrainian journalist, it's been months now, but I was interested in what he had to say about what would happen to Ukraine if there was some kind of a deal struck that Ukraine wasn't party to. And he made it very clear to me over and over again, hey, these Ukrainians aren't going to give up. And if somebody thinks they can just call a truce, there's going to be a lot of street fighting and there's going to be a lot of incursions into Russia. And that's something that I think these negotiators are going to have to think about before they just give the whole thing away.
I agree. And Russia's economy is suffering. Ukraine's able to hit Russian oil fields and other infrastructure over 1,000 kilometers into the country. So it's Ukraine is suffering and Russia is suffering, but I don't think Ukraine's just going to hand over the keys to an American diplomat that says we're going to, you know, end sanctions. So it's a really, really messy time. I hope Europe rightly steps up and helps, because this is all on Europe's doorstep. But Ukraine's the sixth largest army in the world. Russia's the fourth largest army in the world. And if the fourth largest swallows up the sixth largest, you've got a really difficult situation.
Well, Putin finds his way into your book under an alias, I think, President Vitaly Peskov. And I was amused by the fact that the real name of Putin's spokesman is Dmitry Peskov.
Yeah. Peskov is like one of the top five most common Russian names. But I did, when I wrote Clancy books 15 years ago, I had a Putin alias named Valery Volodin. And here we are 15 years later, Putin is magically still president, even though they had term limits. He's been the leader of that country for a quarter century, minus 4 years where he was the secret leader behind Medvedev. So, he's a dictator.
So tell us about the Freedom of Russia Legion. And by the way, as I read your book, it was so fascinating to Google so much of what I read, thinking, now let's see, fact or fiction. And more than not, it was fact. And
Freedom
of Russia is a good example.
Yeah, so it's based in fact. I use the name Freedom of Russia Legion, but I've changed the sort of the nature of their work. That is an actual rebel group of Russian citizens. Most of them are army deserters who are actually in Ukraine fighting against Russia in the sort of occupied Ukraine. But in this book, I make them more of an insurgency group in Moscow. And this is the first, this is my 26th published novel. They're all in the same vein of geopolitics to some degree. This is the first one I wrote. I'm always trying to figure out where the world's going to be, you know, the day the book comes out, because you start writing these things a year, year and a half in advance. But for this book, I told myself I was going to write a more hopeful world than I actually expected it to be. And I think that's kind of borne out more or less. I created the West a little bit more willing to go toe to toe with Russia than a lot of what we're seeing. And I created a Russian insurgency that's more robust and kind of less ideologically questionable, because a lot of the insurgency groups in Russia, and they do exist, a lot of them are ideologically kind of compromised. Like, yeah, they hate Putin, but they're also anti-Semitic, for example, or something like that. And I wasn't going to get into all that with this novel. That wasn't going to be the plot. So I kind of created a more idealized version of a lot of the insurgents, but it's real. I mean, it is actually going on. I wish there was more of it, but it is going on.
Well, while we're speaking of stand-ins, there's another one I think I found, Natan Yurovov. He seems to be the Alexis Navalny in real life, but with a much different outcome. And I want to talk about that a little bit. But why don't you tell us about him in terms of the novel?
Yeah, so the Yarovoys are husband and wife, and they are both in different prisons, only 10 kilometers apart, in Mordovia, which is a region in Russia, about 375 miles southeast of Moscow. Think about 600 miles from the Ukrainian border, 400 miles from the Kazakh border. And the Yarovoys are basically just being worked to death in hard labor prisons. So she's in a female correctional colony and he's in a male correctional colony. And just like Alexei Navalny in the real world, Natan Yarovoy in the book, it was the closest the leader in the Kremlin had to losing power. You know, like he was the biggest threat to power. Mm-hmm. And so In the real world, Navalny suffered a different fate. I mean, he was killed in captivity while in a labor camp in Siberia. And in this book, Yarovoy is being worked to death at a lumber mill in a prison in central Russia. And so it's very, very similar. There are some differences. Again, you know, there's critics of Navalny who say that ideologically he had some ideas that, you know, they couldn't get behind. And I understand all that, although I do think Navalny was, you know, 1 million orders of magnitude better than Putin and would have been great for that nation had he survived. But so I wanted to have, you know, you want to have a very intimate story between your main characters who are fighting a very personal battle. The gray man's trying to rescue the woman he loves. The woman he loves not only is trying to survive, but she's trying to aid some other people. So you have this very small scale thing that you want in your book, but also I like the big geopolitical brushstrokes because all that stuff is very interesting to me. So it's always a balance in the books to write these big stories about what's going on in the world and then also these very personal stories. And so this was a fun book to write in that regard.
Well, it was a great book to read, I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
You're listening to Reader's Corner. My guest today is Mark Greene, author of the new book, Midnight Black. One of the CIA operatives says that Yarovoy out on the world stage would be incredibly destabilizing for Peskov, your fictional title, of course, for Putin. You know, I couldn't help but think on that one, Mark. This is not the first time I've thought about this. I have the Navalny book. I've read it. I can't interview the guy, obviously. But you just wonder, the decision of his to leave Germany and go back to Russia was courageous, but you wonder what he could have done had he lived outside of Russia, where, like right now, in the midst of these negotiations that are going to happen, you know he'd be speaking out and people would be listening to him all over the world.
Yeah, I think it was a horrible decision, and I didn't understand it at the time. And of course, from everything I've read, he did not think he would. I mean, I think he knew he'd be arrested, but I don't think he would be. I think he was assassinated. I don't think he was worked until he had a heart attack. I think they probably just, went in there and gave him an injection. That was that. But I don't think he thought that was going to happen, which I don't really understand why he didn't think that was going to happen. He was obviously poisoned, and there'd been other attempts on his life. So, yeah, I would like to see him alive today, in Munich or wherever, speaking out about what's going for whatever, maybe he wouldn't be taking over Russia anytime soon, but I think he would have been a very important voice right now. And there are some other Russian voices that are still alive and are talking out in the West, and they're interesting to read.
No doubt about that. And as a matter of fact, Yarovoy's wife is imprisoned, of course. And that's kind of interesting because in this particular case of Navalny's wife is not in Russia, and she is occasionally speaking out. So that's a good example, I guess, of how hopeful we have to be that things get better over there.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a conflict in your novel between the two intelligence agencies in Russia, the SVR and the FSB, which is the old KGB. Tell us about that, whether it's in your novel or whether it's just general information about, I mean, in your novel, they're really opposed to each other.
Yeah,
And
yeah, yeah.
I guess that may be a little exaggerated, but maybe it's not.
Well, so I think it's probably there's fictionalization there, but it is real. So there's really the three intelligence agencies: the GRU, which is military intelligence, the SVR, which is their foreign intelligence, and the FSB, which is their domestic intelligence, except the FSB also is in charge over nations that used to be part of the Soviet Union. It's kind of like their little wink to the fact that they're still an imperialist power. So they call it the near abroad. That's the whatever, however you say that in Russian. So the near abroad is also under the purview of the FSB. But right now, the GRU, military intelligence, is pretty powerful all over Western Europe, and there have been lots and lots of scan or conflicts between the three agencies over time, trying to gain Putin's fervor. The FSB really fell out of his favor when the Ukrainian war didn't go the way that they had promised him that it would. They really thought that, at least half of Ukraine was going to see Russia as liberators, and that clearly didn't happen. Even native Russian-speaking citizens of Ukraine picked up, weapons and fought and are still fighting, those who are still alive. And so, at different times, there's been different, I guess, levels to the ire between the different agencies. But for fictional purposes, I really am making the GRU and the FSB and the SVR just point blank hate each other and all trying to come up with schemes to make themselves look better and the other agencies look worse. I think it makes for interesting reading.
It certainly did. Your narrative also describes Moscow and St. Petersburg crawling with children wearing uniforms and recruitment signs passed out to whoever will take them. It reminded me of a book called Z Generation, Into the Heart of Russia's Fascist Youth. It's written by Ian Garner, who actually teaches in Warsaw. Tell us about the National Youth Army or the Youth Army, both fictionally and in real life.
This is something I knew nothing about, but when I was there in Russia, you'd see them on the street corners trying to recruit other kids, or I never really knew exactly what they're doing, but just sort of standing there at attention with these like really like cold hard stares that you would think like a Russian assassin in his 30s would have, or some military officer. And this is like a 14-year-old girl in a ponytail and her wearing the full uniform, the full kit and everything. And so I just thought it was an intriguing thing just to see that all over the place. So I did a little research on it, and I just wanted to mention it in the story because I wanted to sort of show Moscow. Because even in my time in Moscow, which was several years ago, I saw some people, perhaps of a different ethnicity other than Russians, get questioned in the subway and actually carted off by six or eight guys who were Oman, OMON, which is one of their sort of jackbooted paramilitary groups. Everybody's got a sort of different type of camouflage on, but they all have the kind of body armor and the big truncheons and, of course, guns. And they just sort of like roam Moscow, and what they call the National Guard isn't the same thing we have as a National Guard. Their National Guard is basically their interior security forces, but then there's other groups as well. And then I saw this the youth army stuff, and it reminded me like of the Hitler Youth that you'd see in old real
Right.
movies
Yeah.
from the war. And it was just fascinating to see it in real life. And then I just wanted to sort of portray that this country as, you know, they are on a wartime footing, even though the vast majority of the soldiers who have been killed are, you know, kids from the Ural Mountains and nowhere near Moscow and St. Petersburg. That is changing as the war drags on. The Russia's going to have their 1 millionth casualty by May in this 3 year war. And so it's their loss of life is incredible. Putin doesn't care, and he's got a lot more people. So it's, you know, what's more important to him is artillery shells and tanks and whatnot. And they're losing that stuff at a very fast rate as well.
Well, it looks like Putin's doing all of his recruiting in the rural countries that were once upon a time part of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, there's a
And
lot of that. Tartars and Kazakhs and
yeah.
all those different groups.
So there's a Russian oligarch in your novel that's footing the bill for the war effort against the Russians. Is that character ripped from the headlines, or is that just
Yeah,
a creation?
again, yeah, it, no, again, it's an idealized version of something. There's a guy named Mikhail Khodorkovsky, and in this book, his name is Mikhail Sorokin. And so Khodorkovsky isn't doing that, but in my version, so he was one of Putin's oligarchs, and then fell out of favor with Putin, was imprisoned, and then expelled from Russia. So he got off pretty easy. And I just imagined, what if he got out with his billions? And it's not hard to get out of Russia with your billions, because your billions aren't there. They're in the West, and they're channeled through London or Cyprus or whatever. So, or the United States. So, you know, I would love to see one of these guys with dozens of billions of dollars spend that to try and turn Russia into a better place. But I don't think we're seeing that out of the oligarchs. They're not as altruistic as I made this character, unfortunately. But it did add to the story. And
Sure it did.
hopefully there's somebody out there behind the scenes doing something like that.
There's a Russian TV personality in your novel, Vadim Trifonov, or whatever, however you pronounce his name, described in your book as a rabble-rousing mouthpiece for Russian President Peskov. Boy, that's pretty close to reality, isn't it? I mean, from what I've heard of TV news over in Moscow.
Yeah. So RT, or the RT is the foreign version of Russia Today. The state-run media over there is really just pounding, you know, that the Ukrainians are Nazis and they're going to come here and kill your families if we don't do what we're doing. And, you know, they say all this with a straight face. And they also on, you know, TV say, we're going to nuke London, we're going to nuke, you know, Germany, we're going to nuke America. And so it's very sort of patriotic, quasi-patriotic, and these guys they just kind of make me sick. So I wanted to
Yeah.
fictionally murder one in the book, I guess.
Uh-oh, you gave away something there.
Yeah,
But
yeah,
the good news about your book is that it's so there's so much depth in your book
yeah.
that no one will even remember what you just said if we cared. But
Yeah. No, I mean, it's fine. Yeah, there's all sorts of things. I have a funny look at spoilers. You know, it's like I'll talk about it in the book, and or I'll talk about it, you know, before people read the book. But you're reading 506 pages and 160,000 words, so
Right.
I'm gonna give you plenty to pay attention to if you
Yeah.
read the book.
Yeah. You know, there's one point in your book where Denis is a Russian activist, and he's explaining why he must show up for work. And this goes back, I guess, to your FSB conversation. He says, well, I have to show up for work because if I don't, the FSB will show up to question me and my family.
Yeah.
And it's something that I guess we don't think much about here because of the freedoms we enjoy and take for granted, I might add. But it's not so over there. And I think that's exactly what you were trying to tell the reader through the voice of Dennis.
Yeah, so just I want really people to think about the oppression in a police state like that. And it's not like you can just go into the woods and then it's not like Red Dawn or something like that, like a TV show.
Yeah.
The reality is you either toe the line or have to be really, really good at keeping your nose clean if you're doing something against the government, because it'll affect you and it'll affect everyone you love. And I've seen that in North Korea, and see that in Russia and
Yeah.
China, places like that. It's really sad and
Yeah.
it's really scary, but that's the
Yeah.
reality.
You have a bit of a joke in your novel at one point. I had never heard this said before, but I had to smile when while I was reading it. It's from a Russian activist, I guess. I don't remember who said it, but it's somebody who's not part of the Putin problem in Russia. And it says we have freedom of speech in Russia. You just don't have freedom of speech after Russia. After
Yeah.
you don't have freedom after speech in Russia. Let me say that
Yeah.
again because this is being recorded anyway. So you have a quote in the book that says, "We have freedom of speech in Russia, just don't have freedom after speech in Russia." I thought that was an interesting observation that, of course, we all know, but put that way, I guess that's what you might call a Russian joke.
Yeah, I remember coming across that in some reading I did, researching the book, and I thought, well, that sums it up really, really nicely. And then
Yeah.
when I was in China, doing research on another book that I wrote, I had different guides on different days, and most of them were sort of the state people talking about how great the country is, and so it's very like government controlled. But I had this student, college student, showing me around one day, and he's like, "I think things are getting better here." He said, "It used to be." He's like, "Now the government lies to us, and it used to be that they wouldn't say anything." So he's like, "I think it's kind of progress." And it's like, and he was kind of kidding, but it was sort of like, wow, I guess if you need a silver lining, I guess that's what you have to do.
No kidding, no kidding. You have an incredible breadth of knowledge about war weaponry, period, I guess. That must have come from some of the Tom Clancy work you did originally. And you train a lot, don't you?
Yeah, so I do a lot of training with firearms, at the individual level.
Yeah.
And so I own a lot of the guns that, my characters use in the books, and I train with people I know who are trainers for law enforcement, and I've trained with and alongside military and under former military people, and I learn a lot that way. For this book, the technology, everything's changing so much, and the last portion of this book involves a kind of a large-scale military operation that the heroes are a very, very small part of, and I wanted to portray it as accurately as possible. So I did a lot of research on the drone technology and all sorts of different weapons and air defenses and missiles and all that sort of technology, because it really does change very quickly, and this war is changing the face of the military, because it's really causing a change in tactics and things. So I wanted to represent that accurately. I didn't want to belabor the point. I didn't want to turn this into a Tom Clancy novel or like a World War III novel, anything like that. But it was important to me to get as many details correct as possible.
Now, are you continuing with the Gray Man series, or did I see that this is the last?
No, I am continuing.
Oh, good,
I'm working
good.
on number 15 right now, which will be out this time next year,
Oh, great. What's
hopefully.
it take you, about a year?
They'll come out once a year, but I write other stuff as well. So
I see.
some years I'll crank out two books. Some years it's one and a half. This year I don't have to turn in a second book, but I have another book that I'm working on. So I'll write about a book and a half this year, I think.
Something just came to my attention, Mark, that I definitely want to fit into our conversation and tell our listeners, especially when they finish reading Midnight Black, please read the just published book of Victoria Amelina, Looking at Women, Looking at War, A War and Justice Diary. Amelina put her pen down as Ukraine's most promising poet and novelist, and she traveled through her war-torn country, reporting on the war and interviewing witnesses and survivors of war crimes for the Ukrainian organization Truth Hounds. Victoria Amelina was killed in 2023 by a Russian drone strike at a Ukrainian restaurant while she was eating with her friends. She was 37 years old, And I guess the literary world is really mourning her death for what she would have become had she not been taken out by a Russian drone. Boy, I mean, isn't that something?
Yeah, I on Twitter all day, every day when I'm on there, I follow a lot of accounts in Russia, and you see the young men and women who are killed, or the children who are killed. You know, Russia recently just fired a drone, a Shahid, which is an Iranian drone that they crashed into the roof of Chernobyl, or the protective layer of Chernobyl, which is, you know, they're doing that after we said we're going to go have peace talks with them. But then they also fired a Iskander missile into a children's cancer hospital last summer and killed seven kids and 20-something people. So, you know, you just see this stuff all day, every day. And then it's just kind of amazing when you hear people in the West act like this isn't our problem, because you know, if the war wasn't being fought here, Russia looks at the war as a war with the West. Ukraine is just the battleground. They don't even see Ukraine as a legitimate country, you know. So it's heading our way if we don't do something about it.
Yeah, exactly. Well put. So can you talk about what your next book is about without getting into too many specifics? I know authors don't like to do that.
Yeah, for me, it's more, I'm still in the early stages of writing it. I know I'm going to do some research in Northern Ireland in a couple of months. Uh-huh. So, excuse me, that's going to be part of the location, but a lot of it's going to take place in the U.S. as well, up in Washington, D.C., and in some other places. So it's going to be a little bit less geopolitical, more mano-a-mano court up against a very powerful adversary. So I'm still in the real early stages of writing about it. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to thank you for joining us here at Reader's Corner, Mark. This has been a delightful opportunity to hear from the author of Midnight Black. I'm talking to Mark Greeny, and I can't tell you how much I enjoyed your book, Mark. It's a gray man novel, and I'm delighted to hear there's going to be another one. Mark Greeny, thanks for joining us today at Reader's Corner.
Thanks so much for having me, Bob. Enjoyed it.
Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio News. The engineer for today's show is James Baker, with production by Joel Wayne. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.